everyone, and welcome to week 5. There's been a bit of a pause, a bit of a break, as Bob is currently in Australia. Say hello, Bob.
Hey, everybody. How are you?
And where are you actually at the moment, Bob? You're at Sydney?
I just arrived in Sydney some hours ago. I've been all over the place, Perth, Melbourne, Brisbane, the Gold Coast. Arrived in Sydney this evening, had a quick bite to eat with Lance Baker, and I'm on in 8 hours' time to do a workshop starting Saturday morning. But right now it's 25 to midnight as we speak.
Wow. Ever the industrious worker, Bob, you never really stop, do you? You're just continually working.
I just want to heal the world. That's all I want to do.
Right, so we're gonna be really quick. We're gonna have to apologise straight away for any interference that you hear, not only in our current broadcast, but in the interview that you're gonna hear. This week we are gonna cut out some of the features because we interviewed Freddie Jacquin and of the Jacquin Hypnosis Academy, father of Anthony, and a therapist of several years, many decades experience, should I say. So it's a great interview. It's an extended interview.
Yeah.
So we're not gonna have the usual feat. There'd be no questions for you this week, Bob, I'm afraid. So we're gonna go straight into the interview.
I had a couple of questions, Nick, before you go into the interview. I got some stuff through my PMs about Freddie's Arrow.
Oh right, yeah, okay.
I got Charlie from Chesterfield, who wanted to know, is Strongbow Freddie's favourite cider? And Anders from Amsterdam, is Freddie's favourite peach-flavoured drink, Archer's. And Alec from Ackminster, is his favourite place in London, Bow. And George Benson from America says that Freddie makes him quiver. So that's all interesting stuff, I think.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
That's pretty good going, as we didn't even announce that Freddie would have been on this week. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. And I got a recorded message from someone else, so it's not a question. It's just them doing this. I'll press the play and you can hear them. It's somebody from America. There you go. So I don't know that much. But that's the stuff we get when we travel the world.
Okay. Carry on. Sorry, that threw me a little. So, Bob, do you just want to go straight into the interview? Do you want to?
Yeah.
You do the deed. It's a fantastic interview. It's full of information. Freddie's a great guy. Take it away, Bob.
Absolutely. I'm sure you're going to absolutely love this, guys. We contacted him a few hours ago. We made the call. Freddie came on, and it kind of went like this.
So, today we're really thrilled because we've got a great hypnotist and a great hypnotherapist on the show today. So, we've got a guy who's not been here for 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years. 27 years ago, Freddie Jacquin started doing hypnosis through this thing, a form of therapy called hypnoanalysis with a group called the IEHA. And that's 27 years ago. And after a while, Freddie thought, there's got to be better ways of doing it than this. So it's just great to have him with us. And we're going to, really looking forward to having some great crack. So I want to welcome him on the show right now, Freddie Jacquin. Say hello, Freddie.
Hi. Hi, Bob. Hi, Nick. Hi, thanks Freddie. For inviting me along.
Hi, thanks, Freddie. Thanks for coming. Bob, do you want to get the ball rolling straight away?
Yeah, sure. So, Freddie, you've been doing this for 27 years. You started off by doing this thing called hypnoanalysis. We need to touch it a little bit. You want to explain a little bit about the hypnoanalysis, how you got into it, and why you decided to leave it?
Well, I got into hypnosis purely out of curiosity. You know, I've always been interested in how the mind works. In fact, when my two older boys, who are now in their 40s, one of which you know, Anthony, when they were quite young, you know, 10 or 11 years old, I remember saying to them that, you know, physically we're limited, but mentally we're not. And I knew that at that stage. And I was always interested in how good you could be physically and mentally. And then I must have been in my late 30s. I saw an advert in the paper called "For Successful Hypnotherapy." That's what it was called. But a big emphasis on the successful. And it was run by a company down in Bournemouth who are working with analysis. And that was basically based on the old Freudian way of working, where you'd hypnotize your client, you'd lay them on a couch, you'd hypnotize them, and then ask them what they're thinking. And over a period of time, maybe 3 months, you'd get to that cathartic moment when the aha moment, that's why I am like I am. And apparently that would change that person's life. So that's how I trained. But as soon as I came out of that course, I started reading about Erikson, and I started reading about different people who are working in different ways, I realized that it was a much better way to work with people than to spend weeks going through all the rubbish in their life, which is how I see that kind of work. But that's just me. It's my opinion. It's like saying everything I do, it's just my opinion. So that's how I got into it, and that's how I changed the way I worked very rapidly. And I found that by changing my way I worked and by working with some more Ericksonian-type techniques, I could change people. Well, I didn't change, but I could help people change very rapidly. You know, things like phobias, even things like smoking, could be done, you know, in a session, really, rather than weeks and weeks of analysing why you smoke or why you've got the fear. So that's how I got into it.
Can I ask after that, Freddie, when you moved, was there any main mentor or tutor or anyone that helped you in the new thing that you did with more direct hypnosis?
No, I've never had a mentor. I've never had one. You know, basically, you know, coming from my background, you know, there were not those kind of people in my life, really. So it was really purely about reading and then trying the techniques, you know. And it was, I think it was the Banner and Grinder, Erikson, Patterns 1, I think it was, of that. That was the book that got me into understanding really how you could change people and looking at different techniques and trying different things.
And is there ever a time now where you think, or a situation or a circumstance where you consider reverting to the old hypnoanalytical approach, or do you think it's just an obsolete way of working now?
For me, it's obsolete because, you know, I know from the work I've done that how quickly you can change people without having to drag back through their lives. I mean, I think there's a value, and I do use it, and I use my own technique, which I call the Jacquin time machine, which is to go back to the very first moment that relates to the problem. So you can just, and that's done in 5 minutes. And really what I do is, in that respect, is I say, you'll go back with the understandings you have now, you know, as a man, as a father, whatever the situation for that person at the time, you're going to go back to the very first moment that relates to this problem and look at it again, reassess it, take the strengths, take the learnings from it, and let go of the negative emotion. And then, you know, and I know it's a bit, but I say, you know, give the kid a hug, thank them for going through that problem for you, tell them you survived it, give them a hug, say goodbye. And that is pretty much as quick as it takes me to do that. They have a look at it again, they reassess it with the understandings they have now as an adult, which I think is a major thing to do. You know, I sometimes say, you know, if I've seen women who've got, you know, their kids are grown up and their kids the great, you know, but as a 13-year-old, you might think your life's nothing. You're never going to achieve anything. So I get them to go back and say to that 13-year-old child, tell them about the beautiful daughter she's going to have. Tell them about the man she's going to love. Tell them about the love she's going to find. You know, all the things that if you go back to your 13-year-old self and tell yourself when you're going through that stage of 13, 14, 15 years old, where you think, you know, I'm never going to make it through this. If you could go back and just walk your younger self through that, that'd be an amazing thing to do. But with hypnosis, we have a way of being able to do that for people. And that's the only way I would do. It's not dragging them back and asking them to go through all the rubbish in their life. Go back to the very first moment that relates to this with all the understandings you have now as an adult, mm-hmm. as a parent, and then reassess it, take the strengths, take the learnings, say goodbye. And I promise you, you know, the change that can occur for someone is immense. Step over the line, this is how I say it, step over the line into your future, turn around, see that child with a smile on their face waving goodbye as you free them forever, then close the door behind you. And it takes no longer, and I've just told you to do that bit of work. But it's rare, that's the only bit of regression that I use. You know, I don't use regression in any other way.
So just for clarity for our listeners, you're not using regression in what people would identify as in the true use of regression, regression as in following a feeling and actually being there. There's still a dissociative element to it.
I never, when I first started, because my training, as I said, my first 1 week's training and analysis was all about that, going back and feeling it. You know, why would you do that to someone? You know, I just don't see the point in going back and, you know, I've done it myself. You know, drop down to that body, feel what it felt like, see what you saw. Why would you do that to someone as a trauma when you can go back with all the understandings you have now, knowing you survived it, all the learnings you've had over maybe 30 years, the strength you've got now as a parent, as an adult, mm-hmm. and go back and reassess it and go back and give that younger you some advice. You know, that's my way of working. I think it's much cleaner and it's much more ethical to do it. Rather than follow the feeling, people will go there. We know how powerful the mind is. If you say to someone, I want you to go back through time to the very first moment that relates to this problem, they will find it. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to dig and dig and dig. You know, it's somewhere in their mind, they know what that was. And even if, even if it's not a real, because as Anthony would say, there's no place in your mind where memory's stored and it's all constructed. But even if that's the case, if by doing that they get a resolution from the problem, that's what our job's about, surely.
I absolutely agree. You know, the evidence for memories and the credibility of memories, as you mentioned, Anthony's pointed out before, it's sketchy at best, and it's all about reconsolidating memories. Which obviously then is affected by the mood that you're in that present time. We remember something differently depending on how we feel at the moment, right? So I think it's really important what you said about, even if you're doing it from a metaphorical perspective, it doesn't matter. It's still going to have the effect because they're making the attachment and the association with that first event, right? And I sort of changed my way much more to how you're saying now, which is you can do it from a dissociated point of view. I don't know how Bob feels about that. Is there any time when you get people to fully associate into a memory, or again, that's something that you just won't touch?
Is that a question for me or Bob?
No, for you, Freddie.
No, I never associate someone back into their, you know, into that, because I don't know what they were going through. I don't know what trauma they've been through. So, you know, it's all constructed, and I don't want to guide anyone. That's why I don't point and say, you know, what's going on? What can you see there? What's happening? Because the moment you start doing that, then they start to build memory. I just say, go back to the, it's very simple. It's very clean. Go back to the very first moment that relates to this problem. With all the understandings you have now, all the strength you have now, go back, drop down beside that younger you and walk them through it. Reassess it, take the strengths, take the learnings, let go of the negative emotion. Thank the child for going through that for you. Tell him you survived it. Give him a hug, say goodbye. It's very clean, it's very simple for me. And it doesn't take any longer than I've just told you there.
And yet still powerful and poignant for that person going back. You know, they don't have to be that kid. Just to see that kid and relate to that kid is powerful enough, right?
I mean, I've done it the other way around. Rather than letting go of stuff, I had a lady came to see me. She lacked confidence. But she, at the time she came to see me, she had two teenage daughters. Well, I think they were at college. And she lacked confidence. And I said, was the time when you did feel confident? She said, when I was 17 or 18, I forget how old she was. She said, I backpacked around the world on my own. So on her own. And I said, she said, no, I felt I could do anything at that point in time. But now, after all these years, she said, I lack confidence. So I did the same thing. Go back to that girl on that station, just about to get on that train with her backpack on, just about to go around the world. And tell her about the daughter she's going to have. Tell her about the life she's got coming up. And when you're ready to feel that confidence again, pull her into you. So she becomes part of you once again. Rather than saying goodbye, you know, it's all words. It's all imagination. None of this shit, none of this stuff's real. It's what we want to, you know, what we want them to experience, isn't it? So you just say whatever you think is going to empower that person. And if you think that the feeling they had when they were younger was a feeling of empowerment, go back, reclaim it. You know, all of this stuff goes on in their mind. But it's powerful, and that person will change. And I've done that hundreds and hundreds of times. You know, either way, whether it's letting go of something and reassessing it and letting it go, or whether it's going back and experiencing and then reestablishing that feeling within you. Either way, you know, it's done quickly. It's not done over weeks or months. It's done in within 5 minutes of your therapy. It's an add-on. It's not. It's never been my main therapy, but it's the belt to the braces. You know, it's the add-on. It's the free gift. It, you know, as Art Crow would say, it's the brown paper bag. You know, it's the free gift. You're giving them something they wouldn't have had. And if you think it's appropriate to take them back to that moment in time, then do it. But I would say if it's a traumatic experience in the past, take them back disassociated with the understandings they have now. And sometimes I say to them, it might be painful, but it's the last time it's going to affect you. So be brave, you know, knowing you survived it, knowing, you know, you overcame it, go back and look at it again. And I had a girl came to see me, strangely enough, she came to see me for smoking. And when we were doing smoking treatment, she broke down and started crying. And she said, well, I'd like to come back and speak to you about something else, which she did. And when she came back, this was an Asian girl, a lovely girl, maybe 26, 27 years old. And she told me that from the age of 11 to 16, she'd been sexually abused by her father. But because of her culture and because it's a very patriarchal system, her father had made her feel that it was her fault in some way because she was dressing too Western, she was wearing lipstick, you know, all the things. And she felt that guilt because he'd made her believe that somehow it was her fault. She provoked him into doing what he did. And she came to see me, as I said, and I ran this with her, and I said to her, this is going to be painful, but I want you to do this. And we did that, what I call the Jacqueline time machine, you know, and it's very simple for me. I just say that chair's a time machine. You're going to go back through time as if time doesn't exist. You're going to go back to the very first moment that relates to this. And that's what she did. And she went back with the understanding she has now. And I actually said to her, I want you to reassess that and see who's really at fault there. And notice it's not the child. No, there's an adult involved there and it's not the child. And although, you know, you can't undo the stuff that's gone on in the past, by looking at something again, as painful as it might be, you can reassess it and you can understand it in a different way. And the guilt that she felt, which is the thing that most people are left with in situations, that was gone. And that was a major thing for her. You know, you're not asking her to blame people or do anything else or feel differently, but to look at it. The guilt that she had been made to feel, she understood differently by looking at it again and seeing who was really at fault. And noticing it's not the child in that situation that's at fault. So anyway, that's how I would use it. And you can use it with serious trauma, but if you're going to use it with serious trauma, make sure they disassociate when they go back.
I do love, by the way, Bob and I have had this conversation before. I love people who talk in anecdotes. Rather, you know, you're, for the people listening, Freddie's clearly a therapist. He's,
yeah.
you know, there's, when you have a conversation with someone, their minds immediately go back to an anecdote or a real case history. And so it's lovely to hear when, you know, talking to the likes of yourself, Freddie, when you're not talking in theory, you're actually talking in application and when you did it. Right, Bob?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
he doesn't guide, yeah? That's the main thing he was talking about. Carry on, Freddie.
You know, Bob sat in on one of our trainings years back, and he'll tell you that Anthony spends most of his time trying to stop me from telling too many anecdotes, you know, because he has a schedule and we have to get a lot of training in. But I'm off on a tangent loads of times. And, you know, it's one of his major jobs, and he does it very well, is to try and keep my storytelling to a bit of a limit, which is quite difficult for me because I tend to go off on one. Yeah.
Well, you say, Freddie, you say that. I think that boy has been holding you back for years. You need to dump that boy now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We've done a lot of travelling together, and that's off the back of his book. So, you know, there's a lot to be grateful for. And I'm so lucky. You know, you talk about, you know, I said earlier, I don't have a mentor. But what I do have is Anthony, and we do bounce our ideas off each other all the time. You know, and yeah. he tries his best to keep me on the straight and narrow. You know, very good man, and he's a very good hypnotherapist and hypnotist, and he's so well read. You know, I know from a child, he's devoured books. You know, when he was a tiny little boy, he had a room full of books, he'd read every single one. And I don't think, you might know better than me, but I don't think there's anyone that you can speak to is more knowledgeable about hypnosis than Anthony. And he can name chapter and verse from so many different books on hypnosis. You know, he's very, very well read, and he's my son. I love him to death. But I have to say, he is one of the most intelligent and brilliant men I know.
Well, he's all so, lovely. And Freddie, when you talk about traveling together, you're soon going, and I'm meeting you next month. We're going to be together in Brazil, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, fantastic, yeah.
So you're not you been want yet? To talk about, I've never been to Brazil. So I'm like, you have,
well,
of course.
You know, when you go out there, Bob, they're going to treat you like a rock star. You know, the passion they have for hypnosis, the love they have for it, and the credit they give to us, you know, especially the British, as hypnotherapists, you know, they just love what we do, and it's going to be great. You know, they're such brilliant hosts, and yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
And you'll know this, Freddie, because I got it at 3. I'm in Sydney, Australia right now, so I don't know what time it arrived, but my email says it arrived at 17 minutes past 3 this morning. I'm assuming that's Australian time from our boy out there, and he says they're inviting us to go for Rio de Janeiro for 4 or 5 days, yeah? And then after that, we're going to somewhere else for 7 days. So I forget the name of the city. Is it called Horizonte? Do you know the name?
Belo Horizonte.
The second place? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, horizon. More to that. And Freddie, yeah. Let me ask you, while you're there, are you going to be doing, are you talking or just doing, are you doing workshops? What are you guys doing?
Well, you know, as you probably know or don't know, Anthony just says to me, be here, be there, this is what we're doing. And I turn up and I do my best. So yeah. I probably won't know until get on the flight exactly what I'm going to do, but I believe I'm doing my presentation. Anthony will be doing it. I might do the Arrow presentation, which I'm going to be doing again in August. Sorry?
I don't know if it's true or not. He told me, Nick, he tells you to turn up, what to do, and when you're finished, he tells us he gives you a half bottle of sherry. Is that true?
No, it's a quarter bottle, if I'm lucky.
Okay, so listen, let's now that you moved on to that,
he sometimes throws a fiver in if I'm lucky.
Listen, Freddie, while we're there, let's talk about that, because you moved on to this wonderful thing you've created this year. Can you tell us a little bit, our listeners, can you talk a little bit about the Arrow, where it came from, how it's developed, and what you've done with it since then?
Well, it's come from a few things. I mean, I used to use, personally, before I even got into hypnosis, for years I've suffered from these kidney stones. And my way of distracting myself was to go back to a memory in my life, a very strong memory, and try and get into the detail of it. So I used dissociation. And if I could get back to the point where I could get back into my body in that memory, I realized I could distract myself almost completely from the pain. So there's dissociation, which I had in the back of my mind as a way of working. There's also the idea of symbolism and using the target and an arrow. It just came together. And some years ago, I was working in Wales. I think it was either Cardiff or Swansea for a group of smokers. At the end of it, I said, I'm going to be back in 6 weeks if anyone wants to come and see me for something else because the smoking's done. And a woman said, can you help me for pain? Or can you do it? Don't wait 6 weeks. Just wait around and I'll help you. There was another girl here on crutches. She said the same thing. Can I stay? Anyway, long story short, I saw everyone out. I hypnotized these two girls. And quite literally, this arrow takes 5 to 10 minutes. If you use it yourself, Bob, you know it's very, very rapid. And the girl on the crutches, her hands came down because her hands were in the air. They came down. I said, where's the pain gone? She said, I haven't got any pain. The other girl starts crying. I said, you're right. She said, yeah, but I haven't got any pain, first time in 9 years. So the girl with the crutches stands up. I think I can walk without my crutches. I said, I'm not a medical person. So she gave them to me and she walked slowly across to me. And I said, you're in pain? She said, no, but I haven't walked without crutches for 12 years. I said, I've got an MRI scan coming up. I think I ought to have it. I said, yes. But it'd be nice to walk in without any pain. She said, I will. And I swear, she put her crutches under her arm. She took her little boy's hand, he's about 4 or 5 years old, took his hand for the first time and walked out of his conference room with no crutches. And it was pretty amazing. And since then, you know, quite literally thousands of people have had that experience. And people now have bought this product all around the world. The testimonials we're getting are amazing. Not just from pain, you know, anxiety, skin problems. It's just an amazing tool.
Just to let you know, Freddie, I don't know how closely you are following proceedings on Facebook. For the last week or two, there's been something going on in Australia called Bob Burns's The Arrow, where Bob has been taking credit for the arrow technique, and you can see him, look him in the eye now. But you've been getting great responses, right, Bob?
Well, it's all really mine. No one's heard of the Jocrans in Australia, really. There's about 27 people, and I've told them, I've even lied about the pronunciation. I've told them they're called the Jebians, not the Jocrans. I've talked about Anthony with his, have you seen me magic fingers? I've done nothing but rip their name to bits. I'm taking full credit. I'm making a small fortune over there. But Freddie, I'll tell you seriously, and you'll love this. I was in Perth, then Melbourne, then the Gold Coast. Tomorrow morning I do a thing in Sydney, and next weekend I'm going to be down in New Zealand talking about you guys. You and that little monster who's been holding you back for years. I could be talking about you. But listen, you'll love this story, I think. I wrote in the back of a board, I do not think this will work. Yeah? I did an experiment. I do not think this will work because I did not think this thing would work. And there's lots of people listening to this. I know at least there's 80 people going to be listening to this right now. And I got a lass that came forward. She was a full-time therapist. She understands this business. And she'd been riddled with the sciatica since early that morning, she told me. It was now 11 o'clock in the morning. When she gets it, for a couple of months. I did the auto, not as good as you, I'm sure, but the best I could by the notes I took from you. I did the whole arrow thing. Nick takes the piss out of me, by the way, when I do the noise. You know the noise of the arrow? He completely takes the piss out of me. I think I've got it right. Sometimes I go, and Nick just takes the piss. It doesn't matter. I did the arrow, and I'm telling you now, he says, so where's the pain now? And she says, it's totally gone. It's totally gone. Yeah. And I turned the board down, and there was, I do not think this will work. And the whole room collapsed in laughter. Yeah, but the lady's fame is gone. I've used it 3 times. I've got it written down here in my little notes here. I've used it for sciatica, a hip injury, and head pain. And I have to. And I'm going to be honest with you now. I had no confidence because it's not my thing. It's yours. Yeah. I tried to give it as best as I could based on what you said. And if anybody knows my work, they know that I'm actually quite pessimistic in the therapy room, even with my own stuff. We won't get involved in that. That's for lots of reasons. But I'm telling you, I got results 3 out of 3. So full credit to you for that.
It's such a simple technique. I'm just going to move over here because my battery is saying low. I don't want to run out, so I'm going to kneel down here and do this. It is a simple technique, and maybe that's what puts people off. It can't be that easy. Well, the fact is, it is that easy. My goal is to get the arrow technique into everyone's hands. You know, if you're a teacher, a parent, you know, why would a doctor not use this technique? If your patient is taking the maximum amount of pain control, chemical pain control, and it's not doing anything else for them, why would you not, in that 5-minute appointment with them, run the arrow technique? What have they got to lose? You know, you're not offering them any more pills or potions, just saying, look, if you can imagine, let's run this. What have we got to lose? So I want this in everyone's hands. You don't have to be a hypnotist to use it. Obviously, we're selling it as a hypnotherapy tool because that's our background. But in reality, you don't have to hypnotize people to use this tool. And that's the joy of it. You know, and as I said, thousands of people are getting relief from this around the world now. We're selling it online from the Arrow technique.com.
And also, Freddie, you know, this isn't, we're talking about pain, and it came about through pain, but you can use it for emotional pain, right? You can use it for other issues as well.
Yeah, people are putting everything in it. You know, anxiety, stress. But, you know, people who are using this tool and have bought it online and using it for skin complaints. It's just amazing. And the joy of it is, although we're looking at it as a way of eliminating pain or emotional pain or anxiety, you can put positive things in there. You could put confidence in that target. And instead of, as you go through the target, eliminating pain, as you go through the target, your body's flooded with confidence or flooded with strength or whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be something you're going to eliminate by using this technique. It could be something that you can gain as you go through it. And that's the joy of it. You know, the more people that use it and the more people's imagination run on it, then the more we're finding out what it can do. You know, although it's come from my mind, if you like, and it's my development, I'm so pleased with it that people are using it. And people, like I've said to Anthony, when we train people, when those people go out and they start this work and they start helping people, in my mind, everyone they help, we've had a little hand in. You know, we've had a part of that healing, because we've, you know, our own learning, our own skills have gone toward that.
Mm. And Bob, was you going to say something then? You raised your hand up. I got to say as well, if people are listening, we'll put the links up on the website and at the bottom of the podcast of where they can buy the Arrow and yours and Anthony's other products as well online. So that link will be on the website. And I've got to say, after you did your presentation at the convention, there was a rush to the desk, there really was a big shifting of units going on. You was actually helping a young lady out at the time, I think. So Anthony sort of had to come and restock the table at one point. Obviously, you got a great reception at a convention when you was demonstrating it. And you had everyone up in the room, right, as well?
I think I've got a quarter of a bottle of sherry for that.
Those kidney stones are coming back if you keep on with that sherry, I'll tell you.
Freddie, I want to ask you, are you getting good feedback from these other therapists who are now working on it now? Are you getting feedback from the actual therapists themselves?
Oh, yeah, that's what we're getting the feedback from. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. You know, I can't say anything other than that. The amount of people who are changing and using this technique and getting amazing results with it, it's just fantastic. You know, from my point of view, because I've had a bit of a hand in it, it's great. You know, when I did that thing at the convention, I'd never done it before. And I said to everyone, anyone that's in pain of any kind, stand up. And I thought 10 or 12 people would stand up. And it must have been 50, 60 people stood up in that room. I don't know, were you in the room? You weren't there, were you, Nick?
No, I was stuck at the desk.
50, 60 people stood up in that room, and I ran the arrow, and it was 10 minutes to...
I was in the room, Freddie. And what was your feedback from the two people that you pulled forward, the two girls?
Well, the girl, it was a girl who got upset, and she, her father had died 3 days before. And, you know, yourself, sometimes you can bottle stuff. You're in hypnosis, that sometimes that cap comes off and the emotion floods out. And so there was that, and it was awkward for me to some extent because I was on stage. And I did say, you know, I because there was a room full of people there, I didn't want to get into in depth into what doing that bit of therapy there and then. So I actually said that Anthony did. He took her outside with them. But I got some feedback from her a couple of days later on Facebook to say how well she felt. So there was that. But there was a girl that came out of the room. As I said, 60, 70 people stood up in that room and I asked who was in pain. And I ran the arrow and I said, anyone whose pain's gone completely or has been radically reduced, sit down. And only two people were left stood up in that room. For me, it was an amazing sight, you know, to see that you could do that and have an effect on such a mass amount of people in pain. And it also made it clear, and I said before we even started, I said, everyone in this room is a therapist. Have a look around the room because these are your clients. If you look at, you take it as a percentage of the world, you know, you can see that everyone at some point is going to suffer pain. So this arrow tool was just phenomenal. You're going to use it at some point with your clients. So, yeah, I mean, the feedback was great. Another girl came out. She was with us the night before in the bar. I can't remember her name. She said she'd been in pain for 7 years and the pain had gone.
And that was the other girl, yeah?
No, the other girl, she's a therapist herself. She came out and you saw at the time when I asked her where the pain was reduced, it had gone down something like a 2. And for my mind, you know, I'm not expecting it to go to zero every time. Sometimes, this is how I feel, and maybe I can be using this as an excuse, but I think that sometimes that pain still has some use to them, because that's how we put it. You know, Bob, you've run this. The question at the beginning is the pain of any use? Is it doing anything for you? If the answer is no, then for whatever reason, we seem to be able to eliminate it. If there is some reason, if it's still protecting them in some way, I still think it'll go down. The pain's not excruciating anymore, but it's enough to remind them not to go lifting anything heavy or running a marathon or doing those sort of things. So that's how I see it. If it goes down to a 1 or 2, you know, if you think someone's been in pain of 9 or 10 and it goes to a 1 or 2, that's miraculous for them. You know, even though we want 100% result every time.
Yeah, maybe we should stop talking about pain and start talking about message. So instead of the message being a 9, the message is now a 1 or a 2, yeah?
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah. If we stop even talking about pain, because that's what pain is for me. It's a message that there's something wrong or needs attention, yeah?
Well, it starts off as a message, and it might do, and it draws our attention to it. But if it's long-term chronic pain, that message is of no use anymore, is it? So, you know, most people, because we advertise it as a pain control, most people will approach us for that reason. They're using those terms. If I suddenly start, everyone says their own, Bob, and if it works, if message works for you, I've found that by just saying, on a scale of 1 to 10, where's the pain? Most people get it.
Absolutely excellent. Okay, Nick?
That's actually given me another question. You know, one of the things I love about you, Freddie, is, and it's a conversation you and I have had, and it's also a conversation I've had with Anthony, about the importance of intent, and Bob and I have had this conversation on numerous occasions, the importance of intent for a therapist. And I know that you deliver the message that you, I mean, and talk, put it better in your own words about believing that you can help that person that's in front of you. And in contrast to being particular about the language you use, what do you think is more important, the language or is it all just about the intent of the hypnotist?
Well, your intention is going to come through in your language, isn't it? So the two things are totally linked. But what I say to my student is when you step up to hypnotize someone, there's a few things that you should do. If it's the therapy situation, hold the thought in the core of your being. And this is what I hold. And why would you not if you're a therapist? So this is the thought I hold. I care about you and I want you to be well. Sometimes I'll say it, but I'll always feel it. I'll always think it. You know, if I'm going to do the Jacqueline power lift, which is an induction where we reach over and pick the person's hand up, before I touch the person's hand, I'm going to run that in my mind. I care about you and I want you to be well. Because whether it's true or not, I believe that if you're feeling that when you pick that person's hand up, it will transfer through in the way you touch that person's hand rather than just grab it and pick it up. And the other thing is when you step up as a hypnotherapist, these little language loops I run in my own head. If someone says, can you hypnotize me? This is what I run in my head. You know, I'm a great hypnotist. You're a great subject and you're going to be hypnotized. I don't say it. Sometimes I do. But if, you know, I will always think it. So that intention that this person, and as I said, you know, are we going to get 100% results all the time? No. But if you act as if you are going to, then you're going to get more results than you would do if you step up and say, I'm going to try and help you. I hope to help you. I'm going to do everything I can to help you. And with a bit of luck and a wind behind us, we might get a result. You know, that's not how you should approach this. You know, when I say to people, and as I said, Anthony used to walk out of the room because he'd say, you know, because I'd say, in a moment, the pain will be gone. And he'd say, don't say that. You know? But now he's seen it so many times and he uses it himself all the time. You know, that it's become part of that. You know, is it going to go to zero all the time? No. But it's going to go, you're going to get better results by stepping up as if it's going to work. Your intention, your attitude towards it is a major thing. It's my opinion.
Now, Bob, you didn't. So Bob, when you run it the first time, that intent wouldn't have been there, right? So, I mean,
no.
So that shows the strength of the protocol, right? That that you got such a good result. So for listeners to combine that, to combine the effectiveness of the protocol with the intent behind it, as Freddie described, right? You're talking about a powerful tool there for them to use.
Well, it's a whole different thing, Nick. It goes into long discussions from psychology through spiritual healing, so on and so forth. Is intention real? It's a big thing. Some of us believe it is, others do not. Every spiritual healer in the world, for example, is. They're all absolutely beautiful. Their intention is absolute. They get results. A lot of them don't. So does skill come into it? Yes, it does. It's not just intention. But it can't do any harm. And I'd rather think of good thoughts than bad thoughts. For me, I think intention is important. But you know my work, Nick, and you do. I count myself as a pessimistic healer, but a positive pessimist. So it's a one-off thing that I do. I think most people would disagree with me, and that's okay. They could all be right. I could be wrong. But I'll tell you what, I would far rather be talking to somebody with positive intention than somebody with negative intention.
Absolutely.
And I want to believe that intention can do it. It's just that I've met so many others without the skill of Freddie who believe that intention alone can do it. And like I said, it's a huge discussion. It's a huge one. Yeah,
I'm not saying that it's intention alone is going to do the work. The technique,
absolutely.
You know, your language, all of that does the work. But I'm saying that behind that, if the person, if you show doubt when you step up to work with someone, if you have doubts about yourself, that's going to transfer through. And if one of the things I say to my I try and teach my students, and I say it's harder to learn than the actual technique sometimes. And it's this, and it's not my words. I wish it was. It's Erickson's words. He was working with a cancer client who had his jaw had been removed, and he was in agony. And afterwards, the guy had no pain. And someone asked Erickson, he said, did you know you could do that? Did you know it was going to work? And he said this, and this is a core thought that I hold, and I say to all my students to try and learn how to do it, and it's this. I had my doubts, but what I had no doubt about was I could keep my doubts to myself. And that's a major, major thing to learn in this job. You know, it doesn't matter. You're going to make, you know, try and keep judgments out of your mind, but it's difficult at times. You think this person's not bright enough to get this. This person's not smart enough to understand what I'm talking about. You will have your doubts, but what you must have no doubt about is that you can keep your doubts to yourself. And that is a major thing. It's harder to learn to do than some of these techniques we're teaching, but it's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And by the way, there's going to be loads of people rewinding this little podcast now to write that saying down.
Yeah.
I know that already. They're going to be going, shit, what was that? And then we rewinded it. Now, moving...
Well, it's one of my favourite Ericksonian quotes. And I never heard it from Ericksonian. I heard it from Freddie a couple of years ago. That's why it became one of my favourite Ericksonian quotes. On you go, Nick.
I was just going to say, you know, I touched on it earlier that you... it's so refreshing to hear a therapist talk anecdotally rather than practically, right? So, or as a trainer, but actually as a therapist. Now you've been writing, you've been beavering away at the typewriter. I assume a man of your generation still uses a typewriter, Freddie. But you,
yeah,
you're,
no. Yeah, it's a quill,
You're writing a book, right? Just tell us about it.
Right, well, people have been asking me for years, are you going to write a book, you know, about your therapy? Years ago, there was a book by Jay Haley. It was called Uncommon Therapy it was all about Erickson's work and his anecdotes and his case studies. And over the years, I've seen lots of, you know, strange kinds of people approach you, as Bob would have done. You know, strange phobias, strange different behaviours. And so, although I'm not naming anyone in it, I you know, some of these are in it. And I've some of them are nice titles. There was The Man with the Phobic Foot, which is a nice little story about a guy who couldn't drive over bridges. There's the Woman in the Yellow Rubber Gloves. She was a smoker. I can't. So, there's The Couple That Tried Too Hard. You know, so there's quite a few, these, what I think are quite nice stories. A few of the things that I say, which are very non-PC, which Bob will have heard in the past. You know, I've just been writing the sort of chapter on weight loss and some of the excuses that people give you, which Bob will have heard, you'll have heard, Nick. You know, all the women in my family are big boned. That's one of my favourite. It's a crime to leave food on your plate. Well, these couple of anecdotes, which I've got in my book, as I say, they're very un-PC. But the woman that said that, I said to this group of women, there are about 40 women in a room for weight loss, and I said, I'm going to hypnotise you so that the moment you've swallowed enough food to stay healthy and well and satisfied, you get up from the table and you put what's left on your plate in the bin. And this woman said, well, I think that's disgusting to waste food when our children are starving in Africa and India, to put food in the bin when our kids are starving. So I said to her, I said, well, look, do this. Take a photograph of yourself, 5 stone overweight, and send it to some starving kid in Africa. And so I've sent you this photograph so you know I haven't wasted the food. And see how much better that makes that kid feel. That's going to make him feel one jot better. So you're in a way up that kid in Africa. Said, start by putting the food in the bin. After a while, you'll be saving 20 quid a month on your food bill. And if you're doing that, you want to help that kid, send him the 20 quid. So there's those kind of little stories, which are true. I've said them. And, so there's a few of those. But basically, it's going through all the techniques that I use and these different stories to sort of as examples of how I use those techniques. And some of them are serious case studies, you know, in as much as, you know, they're not lighthearted. Some of them are, you know, quite serious things that have happened to people that we use these techniques on. So, you know, I'm into it and I'm writing as I speak. And I say that at the very beginning of the book, you know, I'm going to write this as I would speak to you if you're in front of me. And I hope that's how the book comes across, you know, so it'll be my language. If you know me, you'll hear my voice in it. And it's my thoughts on hypnosis as well, you know, on what I think hypnosis is and what it's not. And so, you know, all that's in that book. And one of the things which probably will get a bit of a kick from, especially, you know, the people that are into the science of hypnosis or trying to study why it works, because I say at the very beginning of the book that, you know, that people are studying this and they've been studying it for years. You know, there's people that have been looking into, you know, brain scans on what happens when people are hypnotized to try and figure it out. I have to say, while I've been doing that over the last 25 years, I've actually helped 30,000 people without knowing why it works. So I say this in the beginning of the book, and I might make sense to you, that, you know, with hypnosis, we're using imagination, we're using the mind. Now, the problem with trying to discover how hypnosis works is this. The mind doesn't exist as an actual thing. It's only a concept. You know, although if you ask a brain surgeon, does he have a mind, he'd say yes. And if you asked him to point where it might be, he'd probably tap his head. But in reality, no one's actually held a mind in their hand. So here's the problem. The mind only exists in our imagination. And we use imagination in hypnosis. So if the imagination exists in the mind, and the mind only exists in imagination, now you can start to see how difficult it is to explain what hypnosis is. You know, and people who are going to try and do this are going to spend a lot of years doing it. And I hope they do. You know, there's some fantastic people, you know, Adam Eason. You know, I have no doubt he's going to take the understanding, Bob's face, the understanding of how hypnosis works at another level. To the point, hopefully, where the medical establishment will accept that this tool, which is a fantastic tool, is, you know, a valuable thing for medical people to use. Whereas at the moment, it's, you know, they're still thinking it was in a few. And that's what I'm hoping. We need people like Adam who are into this and study it to push it to the next level.
Absolutely. Adam's great. In fact, he wrote me this letter here earlier today. Can I just say that if anyone can bring hypnosis into the future, it would be Bob Burns, because he's a real clever bloke. Anyway, that's something he sent me earlier.
Typical Adam language.
So as I said, my point of view is very, you know, I'm speaking the book as I find, you know, I'm not an academic. You know, the things that I use and the techniques that I teach are very simple, but for whatever reason, they're very powerful. And there's so many good people out there working with hypnosis in different ways.
When's the book coming out?
I'm hoping to get it done by the beginning of the year. So, you know, hopefully that's when it'll be. But Anthony and I have got a lot of stuff coming up next year. Anthony's got some great plans. You know, he's got a lot of things bubbling under the surface. He's going to have some new products out. We're going to have some new ideas on how we're going to do where we're going to do our training. And if you're interested, you know, in our newsletter, you can visit our website, the Jackman Hypnosis Academy website. There's a free pack on there with some interesting stuff. We're going to be giving stuff away on that site. So if you're interested in what we do, go to our website. Download that info pack and, you know, and sign up for the newsletter. Because Anthony, as I said to you earlier, you know, I don't believe there's anyone else that knows as much about this stuff as he does. And he writes prolifically, he reads prolifically, and he's brilliant at what he does. So you won't have many of my words on it because I tend to be writing silly stories in my book. But Anthony will be talking about serious stuff and how he can change people's lives.
Fantastic. I would actually urge you to get it out sooner rather than later, because I know Bob Burns' The Arrow book is coming out in the new year. So if you can get your case studies out there before he can steal everything that you've done, Freddie.
I hope it comes out before my book, The Dead Swan.
But yeah, you guys are really busy. Do you know what was really funny? I was thinking about you was mentioning Anthony, and you was talking about the demonstration you did. Bob, you might not know this, but one of the places that you trained this year was below me in the offices, right? And Freddie told me that he was going to try something at the convention, but he wasn't going to tell Anthony because Anthony would stop him doing it. And I just thought that was brilliant, the dynamic that the two of them have together. And it obviously creates magic when they're working together, because they bounce off each other perfectly. So you've got Brazil, obviously, January, right?
I think we've got one. I think Andy's lining something up for us in Denmark as well, which would be good. I haven't been there before, so that'd be nice. But as I said, you know, he'll phone me and say, you know, be at the airport, you know, no idea what I'm doing until we get there. And he gets out his quarter bottle of sherry at the end of it and says, thanks very much.
You just follow the fumes. Yeah, he just washes it in front of you.
No, but I'm so lucky. I mean, I'm so lucky to be doing this job anyway that I love. But to be travelling around the world with Anthony, you know, and I'd say we bounce stuff off each other. You know, we develop stuff together. You know, and I think the training works, the dynamic works, because we are different. And we do have our own ideas on what's what. So, you know, the people who come to our training get his ideas, my ideas, you know, and somewhere between those two things, you know, they seem to be learning things that are really good for them. So, you know, it works for me. And I'm lucky enough. How many fathers get to work with their sons?
Yeah, fantastic.
You know, so I'm really lucky.
Can I say another thing as well? You know, you and I had a couple of conversations a few weeks ago. What was the anecdote you used about your dad in the car, about understanding our if you could share that with the listeners, that's just great.
Yeah, maybe that's why I'm not into how things work and how hypnosis works, because when we were a kid, my father, who worked on a railway at the time, got knocked off his moped, but what it did, apart from break his pelvis, was enable us to get a car with the compensation. And so as a kid, and I've got four brothers, two sisters, so there were seven of us in the family, and I'm the second oldest, I might have been about 11. We thought we were going to get trips to the seaside, but my dad spent the next 2 years taking the thing apart, putting it back together again to see how it worked. So we never actually got a trip to the seaside, so maybe that's why I've got a sort of reluctance to get into stuff. You know, I'd rather just be driving the car, going to the seaside, looking at it. And maybe that's how I feel about hypnosis. You know, I know the stuff that we use works. You know, we do need people out there looking at it and finding out why it works, so the medical establishment will eventually accept it. But in the meantime, for me, because I'm just not that kind of person, you know, I'd rather be using it and just doing what I know I can do. And leaving the academics of it to the people that have got that kind of mind. And we need them, don't get me wrong. You know, I admire Adam and all the things he does, as he's great. And we need people like him. But for me, it's just not my thing. And I say, maybe it dates back to that time with my dad and that car that we never got to the seaside in, I don't know.
I just think that's a lovely way to frame actually just using something, using the tools, rather than just understanding how something works. So you're also on Skype now, right?
I'm not very good at it, but I'm just started doing it. I've avoided it. I've had a bit of a phobia about it, I suppose. So I ran that through the arrow. I don't have it anymore. So, you know, I'm hoping now, because lots of people, I live up here on the east coast of England. It's in a very small seaside town. It's beautiful and it's brilliant. But as someone, I went down to the south, down to London, and a friend was saying, how are you getting on? I said, the problem where I live is that no one's got any problems. It's such a peaceful place. No one's stressed or anxious. So from a business point of view, it's not very good. You're better off in a place where everyone's stressed out. But there are people around the world who have asked my help, and now they can get to me on Skype. And now I've used it a few times successfully, you know, I feel good about it. So, and I'm going to do mentoring as well. So if there's any hypnotherapist out there that think they can glean some kind of information from me, whether it's a technique they want to feel better about and want to learn, you know, we can have that time on Skype as well. So I'm hoping that's going to...
And you're happy you're happy for me to put your details...
I'd love you to do that.
That'd be cool.
I love what I do. I love talking about it, as you can see. You know, it's hard to shut me up once I get going. And I was speaking to a nephew of mine some years ago, and he was only about 17 or 18, but he said something quite philosophical, I suppose, and it made me think in a certain way. Anyway, I was talking about what I do, and I was telling him how I love what I do. And he said this. He said, but you wouldn't do it if you won the lottery, would you? And I hadn't thought about it till that moment, you know, and I said, you know what, I absolutely would. And it was that moment I realised that, you know, this is what I want to do. And as long as I can speak, I can do this work. That's the joy of it. If they can wheel me into a room and I can still speak, I can still do this work. And that's the joy of hypnosis. All we need is our language, our ability to communicate, and the skills that we have. And that's the joy of it. You can go anywhere in the speaking world. And now with people like Brazil, where they've got these simultaneous interpreters, you know, we can go and teach hundreds of people out there. It's amazing what they do out there. So, you know, with this all Google Translate and everything else we've got, you know, the world is open to us. Mm. So that's the joy of it.
Now, talking about passion and helping people, I'm going to shut up in a minute, but I just want to ask one more thing. Having the pair of you here together, it's come up a number of times in conversation about the cost of charging for therapy, right? And I kind of drunkenly slurred something along the lines at the convention, but in waiting for Bob to finish his keynote speech, I'd consumed too much wine and I didn't put the message across as well as I'd intended. But having you two guys here together is great because both of you, I think, are very accessible to everyone in what you charge, right? And I think, having had conversations with a pair of you, can you both just share your philosophies on what to charge and why? Because I think there's people out there that are just given the totally wrong message when it comes to charging. They're told to charge hundreds and hundreds or thousands. Freddie, what do you think about setting the cost of therapy?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's entirely an individual thing. But I think we're, you know, people, let's be honest. Most people that do these hypnotherapy training courses, some of these courses are 5 days long. And admittedly, at the end of that 5 days, you can have some real skills and real tools. You can go out and do some brilliant work. I mean, that's our diploma course. It's a 5-day course. I know when people go off our course, they can go and they can take people out of smoking, they can take them out of anxiety, out of pain in those 5 days. But it is still a 5-day course. And then people go out and they, you know, they think, well, I'm going to charge £250 a session, which is fine if they can get that money. But, you know, when people start arguing about, well, I'm only charging £75 and I'm only charging £65 an hour, you've got to put it in perspective. And what I said to you, Nick, was that my wife, who is a brilliant woman, and she's been nursing for 37 years, and she works with these tiny prem babies. They're born at 28 weeks. Their veins are so small, you can't even get an inline into these veins. And she's dealing with life and death every day, you know, and she's getting paid £13-14 an hour for doing that. You know, we have to put things in perspective. You know, we are doing good work and we are changing people's lives. But, you know, when we're looking at £65-70 an hour, even some people charging, you know, I spoke to someone in Australia, £1,000 they charge for someone smoking. And you could say, well, that's worth it because you're going to save £30,000-40,000 in the next 10 years. You could put it in that point. But the fact of the matter is, still only an hour's work. You know, so, you know, I just think if you're charging a reasonable price, you're going to see more people. And maybe that's not how you want to work. But my attitude was, if you see more people, you get more people. And if your ultimate goal is to, you know, I'm not saying don't have a decent living. We all want that for our kids and for our family. But you can do it in such a way that you can help more people and make this more accessible to more and more people by charging a reasonable amount. You know, I'm not going to say what that is because it's different for everyone. But yes, I say just try and keep things in perspective. You know, we do this work and all of a sudden you think, I'm now going to charge £250 an hour for my business, which if you can get it, it's great. But, you know, keep things in perspective. That's what I say. I don't know what Bob thinks about that.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one there, Freddie. I know somebody in Australia right now. I'm going to be doing a talk tomorrow. Now, it's interesting how we can agree and disagree with each other. But we've got reasons for the agreement and disagreement. So, for example, I'll tell you exactly what I charge them, and so is Freddie and Nick. I charge £70 a session. That's £70. I don't think that's a lot compared to therapy. But I work in a small town of 12,000 people, the working class people. I think £70 is fair for a session there. Sorry? Go on, Freddie.
I think that's absolutely fair price, yeah.
Yeah, but my point is, a lot of the people that I mentor, my students, charge £150 and more. And that's okay, they're in affluent areas, that's what they charge. I don't have a problem with that. I charge £70 and yet I'm the most expensive in my shire by about 20-30% above the rest. However, I charge £500 for smoking, and I do that for a reason. Whether I give it to charity or not is up to me. And just for what it's worth, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, I'll be talking to a group here in Sydney in Australia, and I'll be advising them strongly to charge that $1,000 you mentioned, Freddie, because the average Australian here pays $14,000, I'm told, a year on smoking. So my line would be, if I was in Australia right now and anyone was talking to me, I'd be saying, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. The first year, I'm going to save your life, and I'm going to also save you $13,000. Then after that, $14,000 a year, because I would take a grand off it. And if I was a smoker on $14,000 a year, I'd be delighted to spend $1,000. So smoking's the only thing that I spend money on, that I charge heavily on. Apart from that, everything I do is £70. That's everything.
Yeah.
Everything I do is Skyping across the world. But we've all got our prices. But I think what we're mainly on about are the ones who do lots of sessions at 200, well, you know, big sums of money. But it's up to the individual, yeah.
I mean, in 2006, because I do these groups, massive groups, in 2006, I saw just under 5,000 smokers in 1 year. You know, and those are in groups. And you know, admittedly, they're paying £65 a time. But they're in groups of 150, 200 people at a time. So you can figure that out, you know, because it takes the same time for 200 people as it does for. But for me, you know, those people are out there living their lives differently. And I get feedback from people. I bump into people, not so much up here, but when I was in Kent, who would say, you know, you saw me 7 years ago. How many cigarettes do you think I've smoked since? And I said, no, none. And this one person said particularly, he said, my wife and I came to see you. We were smoking 50 cigarettes a day between us, and we haven't had a cigarette for 7 years. We've saved £35,000, and we've got two little girls now under 7 years old, which is one of our main reasons to quit. You know, and that's just one story out of 20,000 people who've quit smoking with me. You know, and I love what I do. I like to think that, you know, a lot of those people, their kids are not smoking because they're not smoking. Their lives are better, you know, because of it. And yes, you know, and I still think, you know, I charge £95 for people to come and see me quit smoking because it still takes me an hour and a half tops. You know, and if they want to come and see me again, which is, I can't remember the last time someone did, but if they did, I'd probably say, come and see me again, we'll sort it out. I won't even charge them. But, you know, for me, you know, I'm an OAP now, so I'm much better off than I was before.
Just
you can only spend so much money. You can only drink so much sherry, yeah. Right? You know, I mean, as I said, but everyone's their own. You know, I still think for me, 95 quid an hour, you know, from someone who left school at 15, is still good money, you know. Mm. And so you've got to put it in perspective, you know, and it gives you an opportunity to see more people. And this is how I see my business. The more people that come through, every one of those people is a walking advert for me. And you might be, you know, if someone's saying I'm charging £250, they see one person a week, that's reasonable. But if you charge 65 or 70 quid like you do, Bob, and you're seeing 5 people a week or 6 people or 10 people a week for smoking, then those people are out there and they're advocates for you. And your business is going to continue off the back of those people talking about you. So it's cheap in as much as it's cheap marketing. If you look at it that way, rather than thinking I can charge this much money and I'm going to see one person every now and again, I don't know. I mean, you might see loads of people at 500 quid, but I think you're going to see more people at 70 or 90. But that's just my feelings. Everyone has to work in their own way.
I love that comparison when you talk about, you know, what nurses get paid. I think that, for me, that really resonated with me. Because I think there's people in the profession that just do need that little bit of perspective sometimes about what we do, how we got to what we're doing. You know, we haven't necessarily been studying for 7 years for this thing, but we have got these wonderful tools that we can use. So I just think keeping a bit of perspective around the whole thing is important for people. It's certainly, you know, it was refreshing to speak to you a few weeks ago and you tell me those things. So Freddie, we're going to have to wrap this up. We've already overrun. I'm going to get told off Bob. If you could give one little nugget, one little bit of advice to either practicing hypnotherapists or prospective hypnotherapists, what would it be?
When you step up to work with someone, hold the thought in your heart, I care about you, I want you to be well. Just hold that. That would be my one top tip. Just keep that thought in your mind. Now, want the best for your client, expect the best for your client, and believe that you're a good enough person when you're working with someone. You know, try and strive to be the best you can be. You know, none of us are perfect, and I definitely am not. But, you know, but try to be the best person you can be. And that's all you can ask of yourself. So I believe if you're holding those thoughts when you're talking to your clients, you'll come across. And be yourself. You know, speak as you speak. So many people I know, they do this training and they go into this Paul McKenna voice. As soon as they start doing the hypnosis, they're talking to you like I'm speaking to you now. They put the person in trance, and now, with your eyes closed, you can relax. No, forget it. Be yourself all the time. Because that's, you know, trust that you're a good enough person. Be yourself. And that's my top tip.
Fantastic. Well, Freddie.
Nothing wrong with that, Freddie. Listen, buddy, I'm going to say cheerio first of all. Then next, good boy to you. I want to thank you for coming along. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Okay, have Bob, a great good speech,
yeah. Great new year.
And you,
I'm going to see, next time I see you, it's going to be in Rio de Janeiro in a few weeks' time, yeah?
Be fantastic. Mine's a caipirinha.
I'm going to have one for you, okay? Mine's a malt. Take care.
With a right, sherry chaser.
Yeah.
Freddie, absolutely fantastic. It's been an honour and a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for asking me.
No, it's been great. We'll get all your links up, Skype links, for personal therapy, for the training, for the arrow, anything else you could think of. Yeah. We'll have it all on the website that people can look at. And so just finally, thanks ever so much. Have a lovely weekend. And hopefully
yeah, and James.
Take care, buddy.
Well, I said before, have a lovely Christmas.
Oh yeah. Well, hopefully we'll speak before because I'm going to have to I'm probably going to chase you up for an application for next year. So I'll probably speak to you before then.
All right. Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, Freddie.
Bye, Freddie.
Bye-bye. Bye. So there you have it. That was the interview that Bob and I did with Freddie Jacquin. And you can tell that we didn't want to keep any of it out, so we've changed the format of this week's podcast just so we can include every fantastic part of that interview. We hope you enjoyed it. Freddie's a wonderful guy. If you haven't had the chance to meet him, him and Anthony will be in Brazil in January. They'll be in Denmark a little later in the year, and hopefully, fingers crossed, they'll be joining me again next November at the UK Hypnosis Convention. So on behalf of myself and on behalf of Bob Burns, I just want to extend a warm thank you for joining us once again, and a thank you to Freddie Jacquin for being our guest on this week's podcast. All details about Freddie you can find on the website, all the links for his training and for personal therapy and mentoring you can find there too. So have a lovely weekend and speak soon.